Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
This is Hawaii News Now.
Does it help or hurt? Good evening, I'm Chris Tanaka.
And I'm Mileka Lincoln. A lawmaker is tackling the homeless problem and taking it into his own hands by wielding a sledgehammer to disable abandoned shopping carts. Jim Mendoza is live at Ala Moana Beach Park with the story. Jim?
Mileka, you know, these are just some of the shopping carts that Representative Tom Brower found here abandoned at Ala Moana Beach Park in the 2 weeks that he's been doing his one-man crusade.
The man with the sledgehammer is State Representative Tom Brower. This is his contribution to solving Hawaii's homeless problem.
And I got tired of telling people, you know, I'm trying to pass laws. I want to do something practical that will really clean up the streets.
He scours streets and parks in his district looking for shopping carts homeless use to store and move their items. Some he returns to stores, others he disables.
I find abandoned junk, specifically shopping carts, and I remove them. I also create a situation where those carts can't be pushed around the city. I think it's a good thing.
Guillermo Mash here with the May 23rd edition of the Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM. Find out more about Without a Roof, Google us, man. We come right to the top. We have a big YouTube presence, social media, and beyond. Good show, always, here, KZFR 90.1 FM. We have the director, producer, filmmaker, Carlos Rene Ayala. He is an artist out of Sacramento, and he did a wonderful documentary called Cart City. And it has 17 different little segments, and you just heard the first segment that leads the film. That little clip was the impetus, that incident was the impetus, for Carlos's passion for the last 2.5 years or so to speak with his neighbors that live out of carts in South Sacramento. You know, as I've said multiple times here on the show, the homelessness and poverty is a bipartisan issue, and we have many things to be thankful for and proud of on both sides, and things that cause people to shudder and turn away in disgust. And, you know, certainly it's worth noting that State Assembly Broward is a Democrat. After that, I'm going to play some Without a Roof vignettes that kind of accent folks that are living out of carts, people that I have interviewed and become friends with over the past 6+ years. And you're going to get all that right here on People Power Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash here for the Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And I'm excited and pleased to have on the phone from Sacramento, dialing in for a pre-record, Carlos Rene Ayala, who put together a wonderful film several weeks past called Cart City, and it's all about shopping carts and the lives of those who are forced to live out of them. Welcome to KZFR, Carlos Rene Ayala.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, the work I've been doing for 6.5 years, I always try to promote, you know, folks that have put as much detail and care and love into something as you did for this, so I just appreciate the time. Why this film and why now? Maybe tell us a little bit. Actually, maybe start with the whole Hawaii thing and then Mr. State Assemblyman.
Yeah, so that state representative was, at the very beginning of the film, is Tom Brower. He's a Democrat. Back in 2013, this clip went viral. I don't remember where I saw it. Probably saw it somewhere like on BuzzFeed or something, some site that was more popular at the time. And the clip, it had like a headline, something like, State Representative feels that a solution to homelessness is smashing homeless people's carts with a sledgehammer, because that's just what he would do. He would go around his district with a sledgehammer, as you see in the clip, looking for homeless people's carts and then smashing them. And that had a great effect on me. I had just got a camera. I had just got it into my head that I wanted to make documentaries. And this seemed like a good, noble project to try to amplify the voices of the homeless, because we often don't even stop to listen to them. We may give them change, but we don't really stop to listen. And I think that's something key to finding solutions. I took it upon myself to focus on a nuance that I just felt was a little overlooked. Like, we don't talk about the carts. But the carts are like the last thing tethering the unhoused to mainstream society. They're the last closet that they have. They're the last kind of like memory chest that they have. They're the last refrigerator that they have. They contain so much and are so much. It's an amorphous structure that yields to whatever needs the homeless may have in terms of like transit, you know, transit of their goods. So I felt it was really important to highlight that, but also amplify the voices of the unhoused. So that's how that began.
So the story first broke in November of 2013. And when did you start working on this film? As I understand it from the quick notes, you spent a couple of years interviewing folks, mostly on Stockton Boulevard in Sacramento.
That's right. Yeah. The process in earnest started about 3 years ago. So a while after 2013, I needed to get my bearings, you know, make some other films and think about the ethics of this, because that was really important to me to not at all come across like I want to benefit from this in some way. It's a self-conscious thing, but like I think it's a real thing, and I think it's something that should be kept in mind whenever making any kind of art or any kind of work at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a lot of care to spend a lot of time volunteering for like places like harm reduction services. I would pass out clean points, antibiotics, condoms. On my own time, I would pass out cold waters during the summer. I'd go to Little Caesars, buy some hot and readies. I'd pass out cash whenever I had extra cash. So throughout the years, I would go to different encampments, and of course, I would approach them like they were a home, and I would ask for permission to come in to speak. And I wanted to listen. And throughout the years, throughout the last several 3 years, like I would make relationships with some of the unhoused, and I would just carry my camera with me and a sound recorder and ask if I could accrue some footage. And over the years, I got those 17 minutes.
Yeah, and that's wonderful that you did, Carlos. Folks just joining, we are listening and talking with Carlos Rene Aiello, who did a run-and-gun, raw-style mini-doc called Cart City, and it's out on YouTube, and it's about 17 minutes in length. So, Carlos, why don't you give us, you know, how filming this, you know, with some of your reactions from being, quote-unquote, someone with a home, you know, speaking with someone with so little that it was all fitting in a cart?
Well, it kind of highlights what's really important. My time out there highlighted what was really important. And what was key, and I don't mean to be redundant, but what I learned most was that I can't really stress it enough, the like importance of listening to somebody, like truly listening to their words, taking into account that those words contain feelings, taking into account that those feelings with those words contain possibly trauma, taking into account that this trauma it should be healed. And this healing oftentimes does happen through listening. And I'm not saying I healed anybody. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that my time out there really magnified the importance of listening to one another and not just shutting each other down. Because, yeah, I'm very fortunate. I have a home. But my time out there also showed me how callous some people are, because I would be working with somebody on the street, you know, listening, talking, having conversation, maybe filming, maybe just eating pizza with them. And, you know, people driving by on Stockton and Florin, which are bustling streets. Those streets go day and night, and they go, there's mini cars all the time. But people like screaming out like, ew, or yuck, or some other kind of curse word. I don't know if I can say that on the air. Like, you know, like that was something that I kind of didn't expect for some reason. I didn't expect people would just like casually be so cruel, you know? So that kind of even magnified more the importance of listening to somebody and having them speak their truth, no matter what that truth is. And another thing that I also got was, like, the fragility of life on the street. Often you hear, like, people pass away on the street. Of course, the homeless are pass away. It's too cold, it's too hot, or whatever. There's no food, there's sickness. But two people from my piece have passed away. And that had, I don't know, it's had an enormous impact on me that I kind of don't even really know how to reckon with necessarily. The life on the street is a real thing, and I've known that, but Cart City, my experiences through it have magnified it. Mental illness is real. Drug addiction is real. And yes, I knew all this before, but like to see it firsthand, to be offered drugs, to be, you know, to be in situations with somebody who is having a mental breakdown, it's a very different thing than to just read about it and to just, yeah, to just read about it. It's a whole nother thing, and it highlights how important it is to not ignore these issues. I can't believe that, you know, progress. Humans can progress through everything. We've built houses. We've made better houses. We built computers. We built better computers. We have phones, and we have better phones. We have all this junk, but we can't take care of our own, you know? It magnifies all this. So the urgency is what I've learned through Cart City, I think. The urgency is what I learned through being on the streets, that we need to really do something. And I don't know how to make people do something, but I hope that through Cart City, people feel the urgency, feel the truth of the people on the streets. And I hope with all my heart that people will take it upon themselves to try to do something kind, because the people in power are just not doing anything. I was hoping that our city council would pay attention to this documentary. I've been tagging them in it incessantly whenever I post it online. So yeah, that's what I got to say.
You can't beat proximity and making sure that the person you're talking to is the target audience for whatever you produce. And I really feel as if you hit a home run with that here. And I really appreciate the comments you made, Carlos, because it is really, really rough. You know, the one thing I'll say to augment what you said about listening, I get kind of teary eyed too, but I was up in Reading and I'd interviewed this lady. I kind of followed her. I was homeless. You know, when I did my gig, I was actually the main part of my gig. I was literally walking around with a backpack homeless. So, you know, it's quote unquote part of the community. But this lady, in a prior interview, she talked about how she'd been raped, how she'd seen people be murdered. And I did some follow-up interviews with her, just talking to her, literally. She didn't want to be interviewed. I was talking to her. She literally stopped and started crying. And I said, what's the matter? What's the matter? She said, you're really listening to me. And I don't know how to take that, you know? So it's, I can't possibly augment that any more than you did. So Carlos and I are going to listen to the film right now over the phone, over the computer lines, using all of our technology. And Carlos, you know, tell us a little bit about the 6-second breaks that you got in there and how you're going to give us a little bit of commentary in those pauses.
So I put in these 6-second breaks, which is actually just a black screen for 6 seconds, which is actually just the amount of time that a title screen takes. So it's like not really all that genius, but it's like kind of... 6 seconds is an uncomfortable amount of time. I wanted the viewer to basically live in that black space with the words that they had just heard, because those words will echo through your head for those 6 seconds, and I want you to reckon with them. I want you to think about them carefully. I don't want you to have the luxury of not having to listen to somebody else, because somebody else is coming. So then for those other 6 seconds, you'll have to think about that person, and I hope that you'll revisit the documentary and think more and more during those pauses. Those pauses are for the viewer to think, for the viewer to reckon, for the viewer to take in the reality of what was just said, because these aren't small words. They're not light. This is very heavy. That black space is heavy. I do believe that the people on the street speak for themselves. It's their truth, not mine.
All right, huge thank you to Carlos René Ayala, who we will be featuring. We're going to be doing a whole drill down on his film. We're going to be playing some of the segments and getting some director's comments in between the 6 seconds of black space that he put between each of the little segments to make people think about what they had just seen and heard. Speaking of seen and heard, this is coming up next. This is the person, Tammy, from Reading. This was recorded in 2014 up in Reading, California. And it was intended to be a transcript only. I did a write-up on my experience up in Reading, California over Thanksgiving weekend. But it was so compelling, and there was so much, and there was just so much pain and hurt and wisdom that Tammy had that I had to save it for prosperity. And you'll hear that now here on KZFR 90.1 FM.
My experience out here, you know, I met a lot of people in a lifetime. You know what? The most real people that I have found are the people that have been down here and have experienced the different things in life. Some of them have been raped. Some of them have been murdered. I mean, been through murders, seen murders, have used drugs, drink alcohol 24/7. They have to wake up to have one. And, you know, their experiences in a lifetime are what contribute to what they're going through right now. Sure, there's help out there. A lot of them don't want to face it. A lot of them don't know how to. They do know how to. They'd rather be right where they're at. There's no responsibility. You have a lot of responsibility out here, though. You have to avoid the officers, you know, try to keep yourself out of jail.
Right.
This place down here was, it was a perfect place for him. He was actually pretty well taken care of. A lot of people, they get bags, you know, from different workers out here that came out here and would pick up the garbage 24/7, help each other out. You know, you have your few choice few that decide to go and steal and rob and thieve from people.
Right.
That is very limited. These guys right here, we have this little old lady that comes through this park every single morning. She has her two dogs. And I'll tell you what, anybody was to hurt that woman or any child out here, there would be 50 people on top of them.
That's what people don't understand. People look out for each other, whether they have a home or not.
They think that the homeless people are bad people. They're not bad people. They're beautiful. They are. They're just human beings that got a bad hand or dealt their own hand and got a bad hand in life, you know?
But you're saying that a lot of people have been displaced with this river work, right?
Correct. Oh, yes. Most definitely.
How many do you think were displaced just in front where we're looking? A couple of dozen? Or?
I would say probably 24, 25.
Wow. Do you know where they ended up having to get pushed to? Or it's just like, don't even
they
know?
Got
God
scattered.
Bless you.
They're everywhere.
I can see you're still trying to kind of come to grips with that. God bless you.
I am.
God bless you. I mean, it's tough, man.
I have a dog right now that just got impounded from over there. His name's Little Louie. And he runs through the park. He was like the park dog. And he's in the pound right now. And I have $100 right now. It's $195 to get him out today. It goes up $15 a day. And he was the cutest little thing. And he was just like the park dog, you know? And he got impounded, and I'm trying to get him out. He's like one of the, he's like an inspiration, you know? There's only a few things that come along in life that are an inspiration to you. He was an inspiration to put a smile on your face. He jumped around, was happy, you know?
And he's been out here, and all of a sudden they're cracking down, so they impounded him?
Correct.
Well, bless you. And you were actually living out here too. Is that something I can share?
Yes, I
But
was.
Now you've kind of worked out. You're working and staying and under a carport, here. Right? Yeah. God bless you.
Oh yeah. Yep. I'm fortunate because I was one of the ones that went door to door and looked for work. You know, and people liked the way that I talked and the way that I acted. And we could be in worse situations than what we are right now. Even if we're homeless out here, we'll still find a way to survive, even if we have to go through a dumpster.
All right, this next little clip was filmed. It was a vignette, a Without a Roof vignette, on our YouTube channel of Gabriel. I saw him going into the Safeway on Nord Ave. I was able to get him some of those energy drinks, and he looked completely emancipated in his wheelchair. He was essentially homeless, living out of his wheelchair. Let's take that away from him, huh? And this is one of the more insightful and gripping little segments that I've actually had the opportunity to film here in Chico, California.
Hey, how's it going today? I'm Gabriel.
Awesome, Gabriel. You said you had a degree in sociology?
That's correct.
Awesome. You've already described all the things that have been happening for you out here. I mean, if there's one thing you'd like people to know about your situation or just being a human being, what would that be?
I want all of y'all to know, the homeless especially, stop robbing each other. You can only survive if you're kind to one another. Stop being bush pirates. What's a homeless guy got? He's got a bag full of trinkets that are very meaningful to him. That's all. He's not got that $1 million coin stuffed up and lost in his backpack somewhere. He'd be lucky to have a $10 phone that actually has $5 of service on it. Thing on a positive note, common love and brotherhood will bring it all together. And before you know it, we'll all have everything and all love each other.
Awesome. Give me five.
All right. This next segment was filmed on the Plaza a few years ago, and it's an interview I did with Stormy Nights. She literally was living out of a cart in the Plaza and had all of her stuff all around her and was making, oh gosh, I wish I could remember the term for it, but there's a term for when you take a whole bunch of noodle ramen and you put it together. It's a prison term for the kind of meal that you're making. But Stormy Nights had a heart condition, and literally she was unable to really move around very capably. She had come from Sacramento for a situation where she was thought she was going to have a place to stay, and that all fell through. And, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks, she actually went back to Sacramento. Folks were able to reach out and help her via the vignette that I did on the Plaza. So listen up to this one. This one is really on point, and it's just a devastating way to kind of hear a woman coming up with ways to dealing with the rape and the assault and the violence that she experiences on the streets.
You think you know a lot about people until you sit here and you watch them being out on the streets. You really see the true hearts of the public when you sit on the ground, when you humble yourself to ask people for money for your next meal, or the worst is digging in the garbage cans. I hate dumpster diving when there's people around me looking. It makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong, because they turn their noses up at you. But, you know, people are really wasteful, for one. For two, if I haven't eaten in 3 or 4 days, I'm going to go look in that dumpster or that garbage can. If my clothes have been stolen, I got to go look in that dumpster or that garbage can, because I don't have money to buy things. I'd rather not steal from the stores. And that's my options. Dumpsters and garbage cans.
How do you turn negatives into positives? You've made a lot of nice comments about being as upbeat as you can be. How do you do that? What's up?
With all the bad stuff that's happened to me in my life, I've had to learn how to take every negative and find the positive in it, because it'll kill me otherwise. For example, I was raped because there was another girl out there that it might have happened to who would have been suicidal. Or I was on my way to get hit by a car. You know, there are bigger, better, badder reasons why bad things happen to me, and to dig deep inside and find those negative things and eke them out and put them into a positive helps me get through my day, makes me wake up when I do sleep, and it helps me make other people smile, because it's all I want to do in life.
What one thing do we need to know right here, right now?
People need to stop looking through us and look at us. Plain and simple. Look us in the eyes.
All right, Guillermo Mash, you're back in the studio. Like what you hear, man, look us up. Like I said, Without a Roof, we've been doing this 6.5 years, providing a face and a voice and helping folks experiencing poverty, the worst form of violence. Our last little segment, I have two little pieces here, vignettes. Once again, these are audio segments off of Without a Roof short vignettes out on our YouTube channel, but it's Tony Thorsborn. The first clip you're going to hear is him getting his guitar back. I saw him pushing his cart around, and he's a street musician that one of the things he held on to dearly was the ability to express himself on the streets. So I thank everyone for listening to the Without a Roof Radio program, and tune in next week where we're going to be drilling into and getting some more insights from Carlos Rene Ayala on his wonderful short 17-minute documentary called Cart City.
Man, I just ran into Tony! He's got his guitar. Good for you, dude.
And I'm happier than a two-beggared billy goat.
Awesome. You found it over at the Shalom Clinic. Nancy at the Shalom Clinic had it.
And she cried.
God bless you, dude. Nancy was crying to give you your guitar back?
Yeah.
I'm almost crying seeing that you got it, man.
Is that a trip or what?
No, people love you, man. You're a good man.
That's what she told me.
Yeah, you have a lot to be proud of about. You're a good man. You can't, there's no substitute for being a good person, dude.
I guess not. Amen, brother.
Amen. So I'm actually sitting here talking with Tony, and it was really a blessing. He went to his first AA meeting today. And after he was done, man, he says, I need to live here. He really enjoyed it. What I actually think was the most blessed thing, man, is Tony. Tony told me he needed to give me a dose of reality.
Bet I had a drink yesterday.
Yeah. How did that drink come into your hands, man?
concerned friend. You know, she's worried about me, you know, having DTs and mm-hmm. it was a medicinal kind of thing, I think.
Uh-huh.
And she gave me the shot so I wouldn't fall apart again, you know.
Uh-huh. Did that help?
I think so. Yeah, maybe. I was going to go without, you know.
Are you having regrets from doing it?
Somewhat, yeah.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, yesterday would have been my first day of, you know, mm-hmm. being completely sober, but today will be that day.
I mean, if we could find a detox facility, some place where you could go and literally get detoxed.
That's what I need, probably.
Would you be down for that?
I would, because that's probably what I need. I don't think I can do it. Like I said to Nancy the other day, I don't think I can do it without it. You know what I mean?
So that's what we should be asking folks to help out, is to see if we can find some sort of detox facility, someplace you could go and get clean and sober.
Yeah.
One thing you could say about how wonderful Tony Thorsborn is, what would that be, man?
I'd say my musicianship and my, I don't know, I think I have a pretty good sense of humanity. You know, I'd rather be nice than not nice, you know.
Down on the corner, out here in the street, lady and the poor boys are playing, bring a new game of beat.